9 Episode Yantra Kaleidoscope. In the spacious hall of the temple, a subtle note of vanilla could be felt emanating from wooden sticks of aromatic incense. While they awaited for the Keeper of Knowledge, the disciples spread throughout the hall, engaging in discussions on the topics of yesterday's conversation in small groups. Absorbed in inner dialogue, one of the disciples retired herself, sitting by the window. Endowed with the talent for painting, the girl sketched black and white drawings in her notebook. Justina tried to depict in detail the intricate design of a picture on the master's table when she suddenly noticed unusual objects neatly arranged beside it. With the permission of the assistant, she approached and picked up one of them. It was a beautiful pipe resembling a handheld lantern. Inside the pipe, like a child's rattle, small beads were crackling. Seeing a small hole for the eye, the girl guessed she was holding a kaleidoscope. By this time, other disciples had joined Justina. Intrigued by the topic of today's conversation, the disciples indulged in nostalgia. Unwinding the pipe, they enchantedly stared at the play of patterns, childishly marveling at each metamorphosis of the kaleidoscope. Circles and triangles twirling formed a magical dance of geometry. A bright turquoise ornament shifted to ruby gems, which, in turn, transformed into amber-stained glass. Enchanted by this childlike amusement, the disciples flinched when the master, entering silently, closed the heavy door behind him. Aligning themselves before the great sage, basking in the rays of his pure energy field, the disciples took their seats, gleaming with anticipation for the unraveling of the mysterious objects. Taking his place, the keeper attentively looked at the faces of the disciples and glowed. Dozens of eager eyes awaited the beginning of the conversation, anticipating an engaging dialogue with the great guru. Justina glanced at the kaleidoscopes and then turned her eyes to the master. He chuckled and playfully asked,
"Well, have you remembered your childhood?"
"Yeah, he has,"
the disciples said nostalgically, endowing the master with radiant smiles.
"Excellent. Pleasant, warm memories are the precious treasure of our childhood. A real treasure amidst a heap of harmful educational attitudes from adults."
The master exaggeratedly grimaced at these words, then continued in a more serious tone.
"Yesterday, you asked many questions about mantras. We delved into that topic well, but I saw that you still have more questions. Today, there will be an opportunity to ask them, but in a slightly different context. I have decided to initiate you into the knowledge of yantras."
Genuine interest ignited in the eyes of the disciples. Many of them had encountered this term, but some did not fully grasp its meaning. Some had read about it in the master's books, while others heard this word for the first time.
"And what is that, great one?"
The question came from Virginia's mouth, who immediately stopped short, worried that she had interrupted the sage with a hasty question. The keeper smiled at her with a warm, caring smile, as if gently reproaching her for impatience.
"Tell me,"
he cheerfully addressed everyone at once,
"what were you thinking while looking into the kaleidoscope?"
Silence lingered for a few seconds. The disciples tried hard to recall their thoughts, while their gaze remained focused on the intricate patterns. However, memory seemed to erase any reflections from that moment, leaving only a vivid emotional impression.
"Seems like we didn't think about anything,"
Carl said, straining his facial muscles, causing a couple of small wrinkles to appear on his forehead.
"Exactly,"
confirmed Amelia.
"It's as if we managed to turn off our minds, just like you taught us yesterday."
"That's it,"
exclaimed the master, triumphantly looking at his audience, who still couldn't fully comprehend his elation, as they did not completely understand the direction of his thoughts.
"This is a kind of yantra,"
the sage declared. He began to explain.
"A yantra is an image for meditation. It affects us through a series of factors. Firstly, color. Colors influence people. For example, let's imagine the color gray. If you see a lot of gray around, your mood will be equally gray. Color is a powerful factor. If we see the color red, what happens?"
"It's as if energy is instantly added,"
Amelia responded.
"You feel like doing something, moving."
"Exactly,"
confirmed the keeper.
The color red initiates energy. It's the color of active engagement. Green has a calming effect. Why do we feel closer to God in the forest and in nature? Because we see a lot of green color around, we start to come into balance, into tranquility. We feel inner peace. Blue and violet shades tune us into something elevated, into contemplation. Therefore, each color influences us.
And what about shapes and patterns, Master? Do they affect us in their own way?
Nail inquired, puzzled.
In the kaleidoscope, it's impossible to tear your eyes away from the figures. They form a pattern, and even in a stationary state, you want to continuously gaze, examine?
Yes, they have a significant influence,
replied the keeper.
This is the second factor explaining the impact of yantras. Take a circle, for example. It creates a harmonious state. If we gaze at a circle for a long time, a sense of well-being emerges. Everything comes into balance, and harmony prevails. A square provides a foundation, a support. Triangles and various stars, whether five-pointed or seven-pointed, emit energy. Since sharp angles are drawn from the center, we observe that energy radiates from such a figure. Therefore, each color, each shape, carries specific information and exerts a particular influence on us. For these reasons, these factors are taken into account when creating yantras. The combination of colors and shapes produces a specific impact. When we gaze at such a yantra, it becomes easier to enter a meditative state. Additionally, a yantra may encode a certain narrative or action, a particular symbol. For example, the ascent of Kundalini could be depicted. We gaze at the yantra of the Muladhara chakra and envision the ascent of Kundalini, beginning to recall that we need to raise Kundalini. It is depicted there symbolically as a reminder of the need to do so. Therefore, when we look at this yantra, we immediately think about raising Kundalini, engaging in spiritual practice. The yantra reminds us of this practice, encapsulating knowledge in a condensed symbolic form. Similarly, other yantras contain various knowledge in symbolic form. When a person looks at these images, they start recalling this knowledge, mentally repeating it for themselves, thus aligning themselves to embody this knowledge in their lives. This is the purpose of yantras. Therefore, when we gaze at a yantra, it begins to help us meditate, assists in spiritual practice, and promotes the right state. It is very beneficial to look at such yantras so that we can practice better, ensuring that we have the right state, which arises from what we see.
As soon as the sage finished speaking, dozens of hands raised up. A new interesting topic gave rise to a variety of questions, and in the answers, the disciples were to discover another important truth.
Beloved Master, an example with chakras immediately came to my mind,
said the charming and romantic disciple, Elena.
Each chakra has its own image and a specific number of petals. Muladhara Square has 4. Swadhisthana has 6 petals. Manipura has 10. I want to say that when we tune into a specific chakra, it already carries information about the petals, and the chakra has its own color. And when we tune in, we awaken the chakra through the image, using contemplation of this yantra. Isn't that right?
Yes,
confirmed the keeper.
That's correct. The yantra reminds us of this chakra, how it is structured and which practices need to be done. We look at the yantra and remember all of this, as if opening a cheat sheet or an instruction manual.
The sage gestured with both palms as if depicting an open book,
peeking at what we need to do and how. This is how we should meditate.
He traced an invisible line on the palm page with his finger.
This is how we should tune in, and this is the practice we must not forget to do. Repeat it. In this way, the yantra helps us remember our task. It may contain profound knowledge. By looking at the yantra, we decipher its symbolic representation. This drawing, guides us towards spiritual practices, explains how to do them correctly, how to open chakras, awaken kundalini, the third eye, and so on. Chakras or some spiritual realm can be depicted in symbolic form on the yantra. In other words, the yantra constantly reminds us of our task, and with its color, structure, and geometric figures, it influences our state.
Master, raised his hand Danjar, a young man with large glasses and thick curly hair.
In Indian yantras, where geometric figures are depicted, there are also images of animals and some deities. That is, as you said, the spiritual world is portrayed. So those yantras with geometric figures and meaningful images, as in Kala Chakra, are complex yantras carrying a whole knowledge?
Yes. Sometimes very complex philosophical knowledge is embedded in yantras. When a person looks at them, they remember all this knowledge, start practicing it, begin to see something within themselves. For example, in Kala Chakra, worlds are depicted, the animal world, human beings, spiritual beings, the hellish realm, the world of gods, asuras. All of it is portrayed. And a person starts to understand and contemplate, all of this is within me, hell and demons, which crawl inside me. I have an animal inside, constantly appealing to lower needs. I have something human, due to the upbringing that a sick society instilled in me, incorrect attitudes. There's something divine in me, a longing for something higher, for development. There's a demonic nature, my egoism. I constantly want to be patted on the head, constantly want to prove something to someone, and so on. All of this is within me. When a person looks at the yantra and sees how many parts it combines within, and when they understand and accept that all of this is within them, they can see the exit depicted in the yantra. It shows that one needs to get rid of all this, detach from it, enter the state of Buddha. The great knowledge is encrypted in this yantra. And when a person looks at it and sees these images, they start remembering their task, begin to free themselves from everything unnecessary.
Danjar thanked the keeper and, with a puzzled expression, ran his hand through his thick black curls. Such acupressure on his head seemed to help him fix the information he had received in his memory. After the conversation, Danjar decided to find an image of Kala Chakra to reinforce today's knowledge through meditation. By this time, another question was already sounding in the hall. Albina, one of the close disciples, decided to inquire,
Master, I want to ask a question from personal practice. When I meditated on the Sri Yantra, there was a sensation as if it was energetically reflecting inside me.
The woman placed her hand on her chest, gesturing to express her experiences clearly.
It's like the yantra inside starts gathering energy, giving it shape, structuring it. The energy becomes collected, clear, tangible, as if controllable. Is my observation correct, Master? And I also want to ask for your recommendations. Which yantra would you suggest for quickly attuning to the Atman, remembering the higher self and spiritual purpose?
The keeper of knowledge attentively listened to the disciple's question and began to explain with love.
Of course, a yantra attunes us in a certain way, structures, helps focus attention. To remember the Atman, you can take the Sri Yantra, gaze at it as it concentrates attention. This yantra is created to remind us of our task, to indicate what needs to be done. The yantra works similarly to slogans or affirmations, reminders written in letter form for reading and remembering important things, having strong thoughts, silencing internal dialogue, and so on. Affirmations and slogans are the same as yantras, only written with letters. And the yantra reminds us of the same thing through shapes, colors, the order, and arrangement of symbols. We can read what's written on paper, or we can extract information from a graphic representation. We can read important settings, reminders of what we need to do and how to do it. The yantra provides the right state. If we carefully and consciously look at the yantra, it begins to help us and reproduces the necessary state.
Albina closed her eyes for a moment, mentally reproducing the beloved yantra, then posed a new question.
Great sage, according to your words, each figure has a specific meaning and carries a certain energy. I just envisioned the Sri Yantra thoroughly and understood how true this is. There are numerous triangles in it, pointing up and down, of different colors, indicating the dynamics of energies. Essentially, it turns out that this yantra awakens a tremendous amount of energy. And considering that it has a square shape, it naturally conveys a sense of stability, coherence, and concentration. And there's also a point. That is the Atman. One can concentrate on this point. Essentially, this is awakening. This is a very powerful yantra.
The disciple looked at the keeper of knowledge with surprise and deep appreciation, awaiting his response. She had now viewed the Sri Yantra from a different perspective, where each element carried a special significance. While this image had previously provided her with a powerful impulse of energies, now each element became uniquely important and understandable, offering immense strength. The disciple was eager to retreat into meditative practice to feel this new knowledge deep within. In her altered perception, the Sri Yantra promised to provide Albina with a new experience and different sensations.
Yes, very powerful.
The sage looked at the disciple with genuine pleasure.
It immediately helps us remember ourselves, concentrate better. If we see such a yantra, it means we should use it. Nowadays, in the world, every day, a lot of useless nonsense is created that carries nothing within, has no meaning. Such art.
The keeper made quotation marks with his fingers.
Tunes us into something else, distracted, idle, into lower states. Therefore, it's necessary to look at normal images, then we will have good, right states, then we will absorb knowledge, cultivate benevolent states. From all sorts of other foolish pictures on the television, we can absorb nothing but propaganda.
Doesn't the television also transmit its own kind of yantras?
A surprised voice echoed from the audience.
Yes,
the master answered with a sigh.
Television also has a certain impact. It's a kind of television yantra that tunes us into negative perception. It instills passion and lower desires, transmits something repulsive. For example, what politicians want to convey to us through the screens, through various movies, advertisements, shows. They bring all sorts of filth to us, which people absorb and become fools. So television is by no means a harmless thing,
he emphasized, gesturing with his warning.
Looking at the Sri Yantra has one impact. Looking at the television has another impact. Therefore, it's not safe to watch anything. It doesn't matter. On television, in museums, in movies, or anywhere else, all of it affects us. It's important to remember that one influence makes us divine beings, while the other makes us undeveloped.
The choice is ours, as if the words unspoken by the keeper ran through the minds of the disciples. Once again, the master provided his disciples with grounds for contemplation. Many of them had long since discarded the vile television sets from their homes, but some still had to tolerate this wonder of civilization because of unreasonable relatives and close ones. The sage carefully surveyed the audience, anticipating the next question. He met Lolita's inquiring gaze, who hesitated to raise her hand as she was not yet confident in her reflections.
Share your thoughts, Lola.
The master addressed her with care. The girl rose from her seat, fiddling with the edge of her wide sleeve, and posed her question.
I'm thinking about yesterday's conversation about mantras, Master. Does the same principle apply to yantras, where, without knowing the meaning, it's impossible to achieve the desired effect of meditation? Or can one still attune oneself and through the symbols and colors of the yantra, the right state will naturally come. For example, if we know the meaning of the Sri Yantra, then analogous to mantras, we can enter a specific informational field and it will serve as a cheat sheet for us. But if we don't know the meaning, a person will still feel the impact by looking at the Sri Yantra because of its specific shapes and symbols, and their emotional state will change. Is this correct or am I mistaken, Master?
Well, yes,
the sage agreed.
Even if a person doesn't know the decryption of the yantra, the colors and geometry still influence them. Even without knowledge, if we look correctly, we will feel the state that the yantra imparts.
Satisfied that her reasoning was correct, the disciple returned to her seat. Simultaneously, the hand of a fellow disciple sitting nearby rose.
Great one. Can a black dot as a symbol be a yantra? It's such a special magical image that helps us concentrate and meditate. Or can it not be independent and only influence when it is part of some other image?
The sage squinted and, after a moment, responded, placing emphasis to enhance the concentration of the disciples on this question.
In every yantra, there is always a dot. It signifies the center. This very dot in the center can be denoted by a star, a dot, or some other symbol, another figure. But the center is always marked in it. If we focus our gaze on the center of the yantra, it will undoubtedly start working, actively influencing. Therefore, one could say that the dot is a condensed expression of the yantra. So you can look at the dot, or you can take the whole yantra and look at its center, its equivalent.
The disciple nodded appreciatively to the sage, accepting these explanations. In the hall, the next question was already heard. Evidently, the theme chosen by the master was enthusiastically embraced for study and explored from various angles. Diligent disciples sought to understand it in as much detail as possible.
Our beloved master,
the tall and elegant brunette Kira addressed him.
What exactly is the mechanism or organ? That is, what or who inside us reads information from the yantra? After all, we don't perceive it with the mind. Maybe it's the emotional center or the Atman.
Here, everything works together. The instinctive center reads certain information, distinguishes certain colors, and determines their meanings. The emotional center strongly reacts to color, to shapes, to the image as a whole. But the intellectual can also react in its own way. The yantra, in general, influences all centers. Therefore, if we look carefully at it, meditate on this image, all centers get involved, and an influence occurs on them.
Thank you, Great One,
the disciple responded. Then she asked another question, taking advantage of having the floor.
I also wanted to ask about the zodiacal circle. Is it a yantra? If yes, is it for connecting with the zodiac signs? I asked because after you talked about the meaning of the yantra, I had exactly such an association in my mind. There are geometric figures, everything is orderly, nothing chaotic.
Yes,
the master confirmed Kira's guess.
The zodiacal circle is also a yantra because it carries knowledge. When we look at this circle, especially when creating a cosmogram, we can distinguish all the signs and find the influence of each sign and each element within ourselves. Depending on how the signs are arranged, specific elements, stars, and planets affect a person. Therefore, one can consider oneself in it, recognize the actions of all these celestial bodies within. His entire cosmogram is recorded in his aura at birth. It's inside him, like a matrix. So if you look correctly at the image of the zodiac, if it's well drawn, it can become a yantra. They are depicted differently. It's important that it's drawn correctly.
The sage made a brief note.
So with the help of the zodiac and cosmogram, with the help of the yantra, we can study ourselves and understand the influences on us.
The keeper of knowledge surveyed the hall. It was evident that the disciples were diligently arranging the acquired knowledge in their minds, simultaneously formulating new questions. The hand of the newcomer, Tiffany, rose, a black-eyed beauty with voluptuous hips and bright blush on her plump cheeks.
Master, how should one look at the yantra correctly? Probably, one also needs to chant mantras to still the mind and feel this energy.
The keeper noted that the new disciple already felt very comfortable and open. He bestowed the girl with the rays of his attention, looking at her with a gentle and protective gaze, and then responded to the question.
Yes, turning off the mind is essential. Alternatively, we can choose not to turn it off, but instead fill it with useful knowledge. If we gaze at the yantra with a defocused look to encompass it entirely, then the mind stops. And if we concentrate and examine the yantra, delve into its meaning, identify crucial elements, decipher it, read the knowledge, in this case, our mind remains awake, but acts for the better, as it is filled with positive and necessary information. In an awakened mind, we can remember the practice, remember to be conscious, remember to work with the Anahata chakra, with certain emotions. All of this we remember and begin to implement in life. And the yantra helps us not to forget all of this.
Tiffany thanked the master, stunned by the incredible power of his energy. The words spoken by the sage, addressed personally to her, acted as an invigorating contrast shower, charging her with positive vibrations, excitement, and joy that immediately filled her heart to the brim. This prompted her to ask another question on the topic, which arose in her mind instantly, without prior contemplation.
Tell me, Great One, what distinguishes a yantra from any other image with some deep esoteric meaning? As far as I know, you can also meditate on an image. I can assume that the image carries more knowledge that one can meditate on exclusively to understand that knowledge, while a yantra is specifically created for meditation, for contemplation. Am I wrong?
They differ in that a yantra has a center,
the sage began to explain.
There is a central point, and everything radiates from this main point. In other images, this might not be the case. They can be stretched, combine more complex figures and patterns, depict a certain plot. In this case, it's difficult to identify a central point. If there is no central point, it's challenging to meditate because there's no focus for concentration. Moreover, a yantra is usually created with a specific purpose, and its figures and colors are carefully chosen to make it as effective as possible. It's challenging to find an image that will fulfill the required task for meditation while combining all the necessary factors. Conversely, an image might lead us to some thoughts then and daydreams, distract us. It may provoke the play of imagination, and everyone sees something different in that picture. Whereas the plot of a yantra is always unambiguous, a yantra concentrates us, gathers attention, forces us to focus, and we begin to feel the state of mindfulness better, tune into contemplation, and start reading some knowledge much better.
The blue-eyed blonde Mia raised her hand.
Keeper, do icons relate more to religious images, or are they the same as yantras?
A good question, Mia,
the sage noted.
Icons also strive to be made in a certain correct way so that they become yantras. For example, if an icon is painted, Christ or Buddha is looking directly at you. If some two angels are depicted nearby, they also gaze at one point, converging their gazes. In other words, there are certain canons that the icon painter must adhere to for the icon to work on the principle of a yantra. Therefore, if some image is painted according to these canons, it will be objective art, a yantra that will help us enter the necessary state. But if it's painted randomly, not following the rules, and chaotic, it will lead us away from the required state. Then on the contrary, we will fall into a state of confusion, daydreaming, be unfocused. Something will constantly distract and interfere, and no spiritual practice will come of it.
And mandalas,
Mia continued drawing analogies.
Is a mandala also a yantra? How do they differ? Mandalas are depicted slightly differently. They have their rules, and perhaps because of this, they work differently.
In a mandala, there are simply more symbols, more meanings. A yantra is more geometric. For example, the Sri Yantra, or images of chakras, are more geometric. The images and symbols in them are minimized. In a mandala, on the contrary, there are many. So, for instance, the entire teaching of Buddhism or Hinduism can be reduced to one image. Therefore, if it's condensed into one image, a mandala, there are many symbols, drawings, and various meanings embedded in it. Hence, a mandala can contain a whole teaching or some significant part of the teaching. In a yantra, on the contrary, a minimum of information is embedded so that a person doesn't get distracted, so that they only deal with one chakra, such as Anahata or Muladhara or Ajna. If it were made into a mandala, all the chakras would fit in, something more would be added, and then it would be the entire teaching. People look at it and remember all this teaching, examining the mandala and receiving some information. So less knowledge is embedded in a yantra, so that a person doesn't scatter, doesn't get distracted. While in a mandala, there is more. If someone has already mastered the first level, for example, was able to look at yantras, then they move on to mandalas and dive deeper into the teaching.
Herman, a short man in his 40s with an angular, stubby chin, picked up the topic of mandalas.
Master, is our shamanic map of the world the shamanic icon we have? Is it a yantra or is it a mandala? Or does it belong to neither, and it's just a shamanic map of the world, and it's so exclusive?
It is a mandala because it depicts the entire essence of shamanism, with details, deities, and spirits. If we were to take a separate deity, for example, place just one umai there, it would be more like a yantra because everything is condensed into one being, into specific knowledge about it. In this case, we can meditate only on Umai, or only on Tengri, or on Ulgan, or on Erlik. In other words, we meditate on something specific, then it becomes a yantra. Because the information is minimized and we need to comprehend who Umai is, how she affects us, what she means in our lives, how she manifests within us. I'm looking only at Umai. But if we talk about the shamanic map as a whole, then it is, of course, a mandala. The entire shamanism and all its symbols, all shamanic gods, are present there. When we study the shamanic map, we see all the pillars on which the teaching is based, see the relationships between the gods, souls, worlds, spirits. All the connections can be traced in this mandala.
The master explained, waving his hands to draw an invisible circle in the air, encapsulating the overall picture of the shamanic map that he spoke about with such reverence and enthusiasm. Lowering his hands and intertwining them, the master concluded.
Therefore, when we examine a mandala, we see the entire teaching, and when we look at a yantra, some specific part of this teaching is revealed, highlighted more strongly, so that the person understands it better.
Herman thanked the sage and, catching his kind glance, glowed. With the keeper's permission, he passed the word to Amelia and, charged with the master's radiant energy, prepared to listen attentively to the next question.
Great one!
The disciple addressed the sage with respect.
You mentioned the need to meditate specifically on the center. Does it mean that some immense power is enclosed in the center?
there is a center in a mandala, a center in a yantra. Even if you take a flower, it also seems to emanate from the center. If you disturb its center, it will disintegrate. Masters also often advise their disciples to center themselves. They say that if you find your center, you will find yourself. Maybe we also have our center where the soul, Atman, resides. How can we understand it?
The observation about the flower is interesting,
noted the master, smiling at Amelia, who straightened her posture and blushed slightly.
Atman is indeed the center, and everything else radiates from it. Therefore, when we focus our attention, look at some center, then Atman in us awakens. If our attention is scattered, the mind wanders somewhere. We are in such a senseless state, then we cannot realize Atman within us. When we concentrate on one point, it becomes easier for us to become aware of our attention and easier to understand what Atman is.
Amelia followed the sage's thought carefully, and when he finished, she nodded affirmatively, as if indicating that the information was understood. It took literally a second, and then the disciple turned to the master with another question.
Master, it seems that if every yantra and every mandala has a center, then the main goal and primary task of any image is to awaken Atman, and the accompanying features are to convey knowledge or serve as a cheat sheet to specific knowledge. In other words, such a high purpose is contained in objective art, in objective creativity, like yantras?
The keeper of knowledge lovingly observed how the attentive disciple independently approached an important truth. Her words stirred excitement on the faces of other disciples, as if they had learned something important that required immediate confirmation or refutation. The sage, with a kind look, surveyed the hall, rejoicing in the zeal for learning displayed by his faithful listeners, and then hastened to provide an answer.
Of course, because if a person is not awakened, even a little, they won't see the image. They must awaken to see the yantra, hold their attention on it for a long time, to meditate. If a person is in a dreamy state, thoughts will immediately float in front of their eyes, some images, memories, and they won't see anything. They will fall out of reality, slip into a dream. So if we are not awakened, we won't see the yantra.
The faces of the disciples reflected understanding and clarity. The keeper explained everything in an accessible manner, paying attention to details, with each of his answers provoking new questions from the disciples. The thirst for truth left no one untouched. Eager for spiritual knowledge, the disciples raised their hands again and again, ready to receive a new portion of the desired knowledge.
Master,
the mild Medina entered the conversation, requesting permission to speak.
It seems to me that I am beginning to understand that the meaning of a yantra is like a training tool for attention. Because in ordinary life, we constantly have to focus on something. In all matters, everywhere attention is engaged. It practically cannot gather itself. It needs a trainer. Yantra is the best way. It's a trainer to gather attention, concentrate it, and establish contact with Atman to awaken. Because everything else is very distracting, scattering. It's very difficult to concentrate. Otherwise, it just won't work. And the yantra pulls yourself together.
The girl snapped her fingers sharply.
If you're tuning in to awaken the Atman, doing spiritual practices, it's also a training device for attention.
The sage cast a calm gaze, full of love, upon his disciple.
Of course, Medina, this is objective art. Special images that help us to be conscious, focused, contemplative, detached, and self-aware.
The master listed these words slowly and slightly softer than before. Each of them immediately penetrated the heart of each disciple, leaving an imprint that evoked sublime feelings.
So, special images created for development are made by intelligent, advanced individuals, and they start helping us. Like any objective art, yantras also begin to assist us in our development. They were created by higher beings who have achieved enlightenment on a very high level. They created these yantras, mantras, and everything else to help humans evolve. They thought about how to help. Let's create a yantra. It will help with concentration, awakening, and remind us of some important knowledge, and created these yantras. So when a person looks at them, they start to awaken, remember their true purpose, there's a certain impact on their emotions, even on their instinctive center, and their state changes.
Master, is it necessary to contemplate the yantra? Maybe you can just place it as a cheat sheet on the desk, for example, to remind and awaken?
Asked Vladlena, a vibrant 30-year-old woman with straight long hair and a slender waist enhanced by a bright dress.
Of course,
the sage replied easily.
Just like icons, yantras can serve as reminders, being accompanying images in our daily life. They can remind us of something higher when we look at them, and if we meditate, we will feel a stronger impact, and the yantra will serve for our development, helping us to go further on the spiritual path.
And how should one meditate correctly, Master?
Vladlena immediately asked, and seeing confusion in the disciple's eyes, clarified the details of her question.
It varies. I'll try to explain using the example of meditating on a point. Sometimes you fix your gaze and see that point clearly, sharply. The gaze doesn't defocus, and you keep it, as if constantly encouraging yourself, seeing, seeing, seeing. But sometimes it's as if the gaze is defocused, and it's as if you see the point, but also see everything around it. And sometimes it seems like you see the point in a defocused way, but there are also images floating parallel. So, how should one train attention, that is, truly practice during this time? Should it be focused and stay like that? Or should it be defocused?
It's best if, at first, it gathers into a point, strongly focusing on the point, so that there are no extraneous thoughts.
The master clenched his fist, the palm of his outstretched hand symbolically depicting the effort and concentration.
If concentration is weak, various thoughts start flowing in.
The sage's fist relaxed.
Defocusing the gaze is also possible, but you need to look in a way that prevents any thoughts from entering. So we look at how to direct the gaze in a way that minimizes thoughts, and concentration is as strong as possible. And we start using this method.
So, Master, does it mean that the goal is achieved if the inner dialogue stops? It means that you are meditating correctly on the yantra, right?
Yes, Vladlena. The dialogue stops, you only see the yantra, and you start as if merging with it. It means that we have tuned in correctly,
the Keeper of Knowledge explained comprehensively, and warmly smiled in response to the disciple's gratitude. Sweeping his gaze across the hall, the master nodded to a young tall man with an Arabic appearance. Amir had long held his raised hand, eager to share interesting sensations.
Keeper, we are currently drawing yoga complexes, and I have this feeling that knowledge is increasing somehow, that it is becoming denser, acquiring the material body. So, I want to ask you, does the space change if an artist depicts yoga poses?
Of course it changes.
The master supported the disciple's assumption.
Because any image carries something within it, some symbol and meaning. If we draw a yoga complex, then during the process, we contemplate what yoga is, what an asana is. Asanas are needed for our body to come into the right state. We remember all this during the drawing process, and it affects us. And if we see silly advertisements on TV,
the sage frowned.
If we see propaganda that is shown to us, then we have different symbols, different thoughts arising. We fall under a completely different influence. We think that we need to be foolish, like everyone else, that we need to become zombified. It's important to understand that the information we visually perceive, what we look at, becomes connected to us. The world, the information, and the information field in which we are present start influencing us. If we look at spiritual, high vibrational things, they give us the right information, teach us how to develop, how to be better, how to be happy. And if we look at something lower, then we learn how to be foolish, how to become a zombie, how to waste our lives on all sorts of nonsense. That's the kind of information that reaches us, and it makes us feel bad.
The listeners immersed themselves in contemplation. The disciples conducted a mental analysis of their information field, happily discovering that, after meeting the Master, there were more positive spiritual information flows in their lives than before. However, not-so-bright episodes of their lives, devoid of spiritual essence and prompting lower desires, still flashed in the field of vision for many. This included television, workplace, and other external influences. Completely purging this from their ordinary lives was practically impossible, but the knowledge given by the Master helped them to stay pure within. Many disciples were determined to surround themselves with yantras that would serve as reminders, helping them to purify and focus on goodness and the pursuit of development. Sophie brought everyone back to reality with her raised hand. With the Master's permission, she asked him a question.
Beloved Master, I was pondering your response to Amir, and I recalled that there is even such a thing as art therapy, where a person draws a mandala or yantra, and their state changes as well. I have even noticed it in myself that when emotions go out of control, I feel the urge to draw something, make some strokes, resulting in some image, and my state changes. Does it really affect us when we draw, create a yantra?
Of course, Sophie. What we draw is what appears within us. Draw a beautiful flower, and our state will change. We'll tune into the flower. Or, for example, if we draw a war, everything is destroyed, houses without windows, some ruins, then our state will become bad. By depicting something, we connect to a specific information field that corresponds to our drawing, and the corresponding state will be reflected in us.
Keeper, I've been thinking about something,
Inga said contemplatively.
You mentioned that everything around us, that is, all the images that surround us, shapes our state, has a significant influence. I immediately remembered that 20 or 30 years ago, bright, vivid ornaments, colorful patterns, were very popular. People surrounded themselves with such items. Houses had wallpapers with bright, colorful, very beautiful patterns. In our homes, for example, I remember many interior items with beautiful patterns, various vases with paintings, boxes with imitation gemstones, wallpapers with large flowers and butterflies. The clothing was also different. People were not afraid of bright colors and created different combinations. But now, humanity seems to be moving towards monochrome and simplicity. Everything around has become somewhat monotonous.
The disciple continued with a clear note of melancholy. Even children are fashionable to dress in monochrome clothes. Girls prefer natural colors and avoid standing out in their appearances. And even wallpapers are no longer pasted. Walls are painted with a single color. What does this mean? Maybe it's some political influence, so that people express their position less, to be like a herd, identical, unnoticed, to accelerate degradation? Or is it related to something else?
Yes,
the sage replied with sadness in his voice.
It's good that you notice this around you,
the master praised, looking at Inga but addressing everyone at the same time.
The techno style that dominates now is an imitation of robots, so that there are only robots around. Everything is monochrome, gray, something metallic, unremarkable, cold, so that a person becomes a robot. Therefore, such a style is very harmful. To avoid this and not succumb to such melancholy, to introduce bright colors into your life and saturate yourself with them, it's better to study ancient cultures, which images they had. We will see that there was no techno style in sight. There were beautiful ornaments. Bright colors were used to make everything influence a person harmoniously. And if we support this life in the techno style, then we become like robots ourselves. Everything around will be gray, metallic, everything primitive, simplest images, some primitive shapes all around, and we become like that. we become robots.
Oh, remember the beloved granny's carpets? Vitalina suddenly remembered, surveying her companions, with a spark of nostalgic sadness in her eyes. In the faces of the disciples, she found as much delight and tender memories.
Master, I remember when I was a child, at Granny's house. There were carpets hanging on the walls. They had various patterns, beautiful designs. When I was little, and my grandmother put me to bed, I would always stare at these patterns, lying with my face to the wall, discovering new curls and figures each time, forming entire pictures. It was simply impossible to look away from them. It was so interesting and good.
Vitalina indulged in memories with reverence.
One could feel Grandma's warmth, coziness, safety, and tranquility, as if Atman itself felt something during that time, found some harmony in it.
The sage joyfully observed the delight of his disciple, who spoke so enchantingly about her childhood memories of the first real yantra in her life. He didn't rush to respond, giving the girl a few more seconds to smoothly transition from her reverie and prepare herself to receive his answer.
If it's a beautiful carpet, it often resembles a yantra. It most likely had a center or several centers, an elaborate geometric pattern, pleasant colors.
The keeper spoke just as reverently, trying to support the sense of nostalgia that flooded the disciple.
Then that carpet is somewhat akin to a yantra. A good carpet can also help us concentrate and have some beneficial influence on us. So that very carpet of your grandmother, Vitalina, was somewhat akin to a yantra.
The master turned to the disciple with a smile, and then continued.
In the past, many carpets were made. People skillfully wove them, and in ancient times, they created carpets that would have a positive effect. The right colors were chosen, some correct ornaments. Often, encoded knowledge was embedded in the ornament. Such carpets were beneficial. If imitation of such carpets happens when modern carpets are made, then something resembling objective art emerges. But if some foolish tendencies in modern times lead to creating such canvases and invent such techno, with some gray, strange ornaments, with a schizophrenic bias, then the impact on a person is very bad.
Thank you, Master.
The grateful disciple gently bowed and looked reverently at the master. In his response, she heard a lot of support and warmth. It was as if the master, together with her, had peered into the distant past and embraced her with an invisible, powerful hand when the sadness of happy memories of her beloved grandmother almost overwhelmed her with an emotional surge. Meanwhile, a new question was already being voiced. It was asked by Karina, an energetic and bright young woman, one of the close disciples.
Master, please advise us. In our group, meditation lasts for 10 minutes, and we are currently focusing on the master's portrait. How should we properly do the meditation? Find a dot on the portrait or alternate meditations. On the black dot, on the Sri Yantra, on the master's portrait? What would be correct?
You must definitely look at the master's portrait.
The Great One reacted.
Because when you remember the master, his subtle energy immediately comes to you. Knowledge that the master conveyed is immediately recalled. Therefore, it is very important to look at the master. You can place the dot where it is easiest for you to concentrate, for example, between the eyebrows or on the throat area. Place the dot there, and you can meditate on it.
Thank you,
the disciple said respectfully, then glanced at the time, checking the minutes until the end of the conversation. The keeper of knowledge gestured readiness to listen to the last question for today, and from the raised hands, he chose Bella's. A refined, fair-skinned girl with long, slender fingers, resembling delicate crystal branches. The girl was very graceful, and her question was asked just as elegantly, with great love for the master.
Great One, over these 2 days, you have given us wonderful knowledge about mantras and yantras,
answered our deepest questions about them, and we are very grateful to you. But we still have the enchanting Music of Transformation. It also contains many mysteries and depths. It is built on some cosmic laws. I would like to understand how you managed to create such a work. Perhaps you heard it in the cosmos somehow? Why does it have such a powerful impact, excites the body, and elevates the soul to sublime states?
Music has a great impact because it has a certain rhythm,
the keeper began to explain.
The rhythm already affects the motor center, the instinctive center, because the rhythm of music is always the rhythm of the heart, the rhythm of breathing. Music sets a certain pace for our body. If it's a trance, it means a fast rhythm. So we activate, become more active. Everything goes faster.
The master squirmed in place, actively moving his hands, simulating bursts of energy in the rhythms of the trance.
If it's slow music,
he slowed down, smoothly guiding his hand through the air,
then it tunes us into meditation, relaxation. Therefore, rhythm strongly influences our state. The melody affects emotions. If a certain melody sounds, the impact immediately goes to emotions. A minor melody brings us some sentimental emotions. If it's major, the state can be cheerful. Thus, each melody strongly affects the emotional center. Therefore, music has a tremendous impact. When we hear music, all our centers immediately tune in to a certain rhythm. The melody immediately puts us in certain states. Through books or some texts, we can also enter these states, but it happens gradually and takes longer. But music immediately involves us, immediately gives us the right mood. So correctly selected music is very important. You can listen to Monk Roman, author's note, a holy monk who lives in total seclusion and composes religious chants.
The master recommended.
Listening to him immediately connects you to the state he experiences in his songs. That is, there is a certain kind of music, the timbre of his voice. Everything in combination affects us, and we already enter a state of repentance because this is the state he conveys. If you listen, for example, to Orloff, spiritual singer, then his songs are very meditative, with a very slow rhythm. The words are spoken with large intervals, and we immediately fall into meditation. So there is useful music that we listen to.
The master emphasized the word useful to make a contrast.
And it helps us tune in to meditation, helps us enter the right state. And there is wrong music, foolish, senseless. On the contrary, it puts us in a weak state, begins to destroy us.
So, Master, it would be great to listen to beneficial, suitable music during yantra meditation?
Bella continued the dialogue.
It's strange, of course, to listen to some rock or classical music or lyrical music, although, of course, you can combine. But if there is also music for yantra meditation, it will be a real help.
Of course, you need to choose music carefully, depending on what goal we want to achieve. You need to take an appropriate yantra, pick suitable music for it, maybe even corresponding mantras. Then all this helps us tune in correctly. So you need to approach this seriously. See how different music can affect us. We choose the music and the yantra that correspond to the state we want to enter. Then all this will help us achieve the desired states.
The sage looked attentively at his disciples. The disciples, with all their demeanor, conveyed that they would like to continue the conversation further. Their eyes were burning with the lights of understanding and pleasure. The longing for the great truth attracted curious minds. A very active and dynamic energy filled the entire space. The master saw how detailed inquiries about yantras and mantras captivated the disciples. The creative energy of these topics, reinforced by practical experience, sparked strong interest in them. Satisfied with the results of the conversations, the Keeper of Knowledge smiled with a transparent, radiant smile and rose to leave the hall, leaving a fragment of divine knowledge in the minds of his disciples.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.